Welcome to episode 3. I'm Adam McCubbin, and today I'll be interviewing one of Australia's leading mindset and performance coaches, Nathan Quinn. In this episode, we find out what are the common areas that hold people back in their personal and professional lives, how to cut through the bullshit and connect for coaching and communication, Nathan's mission to help prevent young men from suicide, plus much more. Now let's get started. Today I have Nathan Quinn here for the podcast. Nathan's a teacher, a coach, a father, and a leader in health and performance and in the mindset space. He's come from a humble background, bodybuilding, personal training, as a coach. Now he works with high performers in his coaching and mentoring program. He runs one-on-one and group business mindset and performance coaching in person and online, plus mastermind groups amongst many other things. Recently, I was fortunate to work with Nathan in his high performance program, which is a real game changer for me and gave me a lot of confidence and strategies for my career and personal development. Not to mention, Nathan's a great resource of dad jokes, so I'm hoping we can get a few of those in there today. So welcome, Nathan, to the podcast. Is there anything that I might have missed about your coaching program or dad jokes that you want to throw in there early?
I'll throw in a dad joke to get us going. So the other day I was sitting on the couch and I heard a knock at the door. And I thought, oh, who's that? So I got up and I went and I opened the door and there was a snail on the ground. I thought, what the? That's odd. So I picked the snail up and threw it and I thought, get that out of here. Anyway, a week later I hear another knock at the door. And I open it up and I look down, that's the same snail sitting there. And it looks up at me and says, what was that all about?
Well, I'm glad we got that out of the way in the beginning.
Let's get that out of the way early.
Yeah. So I first stumbled upon Nathan 2 years ago when I was searching for podcasts. I'm a big podcast listener myself. And I think you were interviewing Nick Winkelman at the time. And I remember you talking a lot about information and questioning, and I really enjoyed the way not only the information that I drew from your guests, but obviously the way you connected. Is what sort of background sort of gave you the insight of your line of questioning, and where do you think you got those skills from?
Great question, Adam. So I'd say my style has evolved from wanting to be understood. And one thing that I always struggled with growing up and being coached and having people around me was people who were very forceful and people who told you how things should be. And when you don't feel understood and you don't feel heard, it's hard to connect with people. And I went through a situation for a few years when I was working under a neuroscientist and very much about the science and research and referencing everything. But what I found was that it missed the connection. I found that style of communication of trying to big yourself up was great for my ego at the time because that's what I was looking for. I was looking for, right, how can I validate that I'm smart enough to be doing this? But what I found was I wasn't really connecting with people and, you know, I was great with theory, but I wasn't great with practical. And, you know, I've been surrounded by some sensational people who have helped me to bring myself out of my shell, who have listened to me when I'm going through hardship and just been a really good sounding board for me to share ideas. And I've picked up certain traits and I've picked up certain methods that some people use where the communication is quite soft and where you have integrity, because I'm a big believer in your biology, and your biology often tells you more than your psychology can, because people can use tricky lingo and techniques to try to trick someone into sharing information. But I'm a true believer that when somebody feels safe and feels like you're coming from a place of integrity and that you actually are on a mission to have positive change, you're not just a cowboy, people feel that, Adam. And what I've found is my communication style and being humble and actually admitting when I don't know something was a big change for me. So I used to always just try bull crap my way around and not want to look vulnerable. But I had a huge shift away from the fear of vulnerability. And when I was actually open and honest and saying, no, I haven't heard about that, I'd love to learn and love to listen, I think it helped a lot more people to relate to me and a lot of people to feel safe around me, because I think, one thing I'm very let me reframe that. One thing that I really hope gets across about me is that I've got integrity and that I'm a man of my word. And yeah. I think that's one of the cornerstones in why I've had success in what I do, because I build strong relationships. And I think that has really come into the way I communicate and what I'm all about.
Yeah. Well, I think it's testament to you, because I think the way you coach is you're confident, but there's no sort of arrogance there. You don't feel that you're being judged, or you're very direct with people. But I think you get that ability to connect with people straight because you're honest with people, and there's sort of no bullshit. And I think that's a powerful thing with the style in which you coach, and that's probably one of the big things that I took from you. And particularly, I've got questions about this a little bit later, but your sales approach and your elevator pitch that you taught me as well is you don't actually feel like you're being sold to when you're talking about your programs or your business, because you're coming from a place where you actually believe in what you're talking about. So perhaps could you just talk about that in terms of your approach to selling and your communication style?
Yeah, definitely. So one thing that I'm very big on is you're always the billboard for your business and your profession. So there's no separation between the person and the professional. And when people ask me what I'm doing and when people ask me what I'm up to, I'm very, very proud of how everything's going. And the results that people like yourself, Adam, are getting and the changes they're making are a testament to the method. So when I talk about how things are going and I talk about the mission I'm on and the success that we're having, it's not a sales pitch. What it does, it's credibility, it shows experience, it shows passion, and being able to sort of get into a deeper conversation with someone and say, look, that's what I'm about, but you know, where do you sit with that? You know, what do you do? And what are your goals? What are you working towards? And then if the chemistry is there and you get along, it's going to happen. When you try to push something on someone, it's often met with resistance. And one of my good friends, Terry Condon, sometimes when people can be a bit heavy on the information side, sometimes we need to actually step back in order for them to step forward. So, you know, I'm not a big fan of all this stuff that the health and fitness industry use, like get someone to say yes as many times as you can, because I don't want people working with me and regretting it because I've used some trick on them, because that's not going to be any good for my mission and my brand and what I'm trying to achieve. I want people to work with me and say it's the best decision they've made and it's changed their whole belief system. So that's a bit about the pitch is, you know, if you believe in your product, you've got the experience, you've got the qualification, you can talk, you've got a plan, because the way you talk about yourself and what you're moving toward basically underpins what you're about. And one thing I've been working with some of the guys on recently is the laws of exchange, and that your production line of your service tells everybody what they need to know. So if I'm trying to teach you about time management, Adam, and then I don't rock up to my appointments, it's not going to seem very authentic. It's going to seem quite staged. And in the sales process, if you can light the fire in someone that allows them to, that shows them that they're capable of more than what they think they are, and that you can help them get there in the right way that doesn't put them in a place of fear, it's such a balancing act. And what true coaching is all about is knowing the perfect rate to stretch someone without them running for the hills. Because if you stretch them too fast, the rubber band will move, but it'll flick back and not want to go to that same point again. So, you know, I think I'm not sure if I'm answering your question directly, but I'm trying to sort of give you a bit of scope.
No, does that, no, that makes completely makes sense. So just to step back from that, what just to give people an understanding of where you've come from and probably more your sort of humble beginnings, was there something about your upbringing or a sort of pivotal moment that you thought, okay, this is what I want to do with my life. I want to move into coaching or personal training. Could you touch on that?
Sure. So growing up, you know, insecure, like a lot of men are, I'm open and open enough to say that I thought if I was in tremendous physical condition, I'd be less likely to be criticized. I'd be less likely to be picked on or bullied. And I took it to the extreme. And what I'm seeing, Adam, is so many of the guys I work with now, I go through the exact same thought process that, you know, it's a self-belief thing. If you get your body physically strong, you think, wow, I'm capable of, you know, self-concept, that what I do makes a difference and that I can actually have a change and see a result. But this whole armor, you know, one thing I like to joke about is that I actually wrote an article on this a few years ago, that I was in this fantastic condition, the peak condition of my life, and I'd wear the T-shirt where the sleeves were just the right height to really
get the pipes out. You know,
yeah, to really give the beautiful shape of the arms. And the chest would be pumped, the stomach would be flat, I'd have all the trimmings at them. And what would happen, I'd be waiting for some girl to walk up to me and go, wow, you're fantastic, be my boyfriend. And guess what? Never happened. What actually happened was, on the converse of that, I get all these young guys coming up to me going, you look sensational, coach me, teach me, show me the way. And what I realized pretty quickly was that our physical body and getting into great shape doesn't necessarily make us feel better about ourselves, that a lot of people want to feel safe and accepted. And to go to my upbringing, you know, my dad really pushed me. He was someone who really pushed me to excel. And, you know, when you're pushed, often it can put a bit of resistance back. But now, as I'm older and I'm a father of two now, I reflect on, you know, being pushed and, you know, always being told you can go one better, you can do better than that, you can do better than that. It can go two ways. One side can be, oh, well, there's no point trying because it's never good enough. Yeah. But on the other side, that mentality and that push has made me who I am, that, you know, I've got high standards for myself. But I think seeing it from both sides, seeing it from the receiving side and now being in the parenting side and trying to find the right balance, I think that's allowed me to go, right, well, I want to be able to push people to achieve, but I don't want them to feel what would be the right word? I don't want them to feel inferior. I don't want them to feel scared and operate out of compliance. I want them to operate more out of commitment, because they've so much trust there and so much safety that they want to not only see how far they can go, but also they in some way want to impress me and wanted to help show that they're capable of what we're putting together. And, you know, just before, one of the guys who I had a session with just before this podcast with you, Ads, is Paddy, and he's a trainer up in Essendon. He's just finished week 8 and he has absolutely nailed it. Now he's a strength and conditioning coach at a VFL club. I think it's a VFL club. He's organizing his own seminars, and he's just got this belief. And when you believe in someone and they trust you, they will go to the end of the world for you. And I think, you know, thinking about my upbringing and the lessons I learned, some of the hardships and everything like that, I think I'm very lucky, because the melting pot has allowed me to be able to connect with people and help them believe in themselves and understand that they're stressed and understand that they question themselves, because I've been there. And, you know, we joked at the start about the dad jokes, but I love using a bit of humor and I love joking around and even self-deprecating at times, because it makes people more approachable. It makes you look like you're human. So, you know, I don't care if someone has a laugh and jokes around, because one of the things I believe is when you're laughing, you can't be stressed and be laughing your head off at the same time. So there is a little bit of method to the madness.
Yeah. And what would you say, there was any sort of early inspirations or role models you started to model yourself after, or was that only after you discovered, I guess, what you wanted to do?
The role models for me were definitely my dad's work ethic. I've definitely taken that on. He works really hard, sometimes too hard, but that's been balancing out more recently. I've had an uncle. I've actually put a post on my Instagram this morning of my Uncle Rob. We used to sit at family gatherings and he'd have his arm around me and be just giving me these gems about discipline. And I remember, like, I'd go for these runs down my parents' road, and then it was a dirt road and you'd turn and there was a bit of a dip on the side of the road. So I'd run around the roundabout and come back, but my right foot was always lower than my left. So he taught me, he's like, you know, when you run back on the same side to balance out your hips. And all these little tips, it took me so far. He'd teach me about when I train, mix this up, mix that up, and it sparked my curiosity. So that sparked my self-belief in goal setting. And then when I moved into my career and starting to look at what I can really do in regards to my business of personal training and my business of coaching, I had an unconventional mentor, a bad mentor, and someone who was older than me, and brought out a lot of my weaknesses, because the way this person sort of controlled me and pushed me and got me into a position I didn't want to, that was a lesson I learned very early, and I'm glad I learned it early, because if you don't learn to say no and stand up for yourself, God knows where you're going to end up. So that was a really key lesson.
Yeah, I think that's powerful as well. The bad examples are sometimes the ones that actually can shape your learning the most.
Yeah, agreed. And that's, you know, in the coaching we do, that's the first thing we go through, is your conditioning of how have you become the way you are? Has it been based on positive and negative experience? Because we mirror and repeat patterns. History has a tendency to repeat itself. And so that was a negative. But then as I got a bit older, seeing people who just shot for the stars, and I'd say, oh, maybe we could get XYZ team to get involved with this. And then this person or that person who I saw as a mentor would say, why don't we get the whole organization involved? Why don't we speak to the CEO? And why don't we go and speak to the, the global whatever? And I'd think, bloody hell, how far does this go? But it gave me the courage to start thinking bigger than other people could. And that's come back to me tenfold, because now people I really looked up to as being the bee's knees, like your Dan Bakers and your Kelly Starrett's and your Terry Condon's and Jay Stacey, they all work with me as equals. And I employ a lot of these guys to get involved in my coaching, and we've got mutual respect. And, you know, I draw pictures about what I want my life to look like, and it starts coming to fruition. I'm thinking, bloody hell, this stuff actually works.
Yeah. And just touching on that in terms of methods, we've gone through it before, but I really enjoyed the method you took me through on your goal setting specifically, and how you have a structured plan. Can you just talk about that and what methods you use yourself personally, but also you give to your coaching clients as well?
Sure. So it has to have adaptability, the goal setting process. So I tried to use the same method with everyone, and sometimes it's met with resistance and you have to adapt and evolve. So to give you a bit of an insight, some people are all about the long term. They go, I want the big house, I want the fancy car, I want to be working with these famous sport teams. Like, it's really common in the health industry. Probably the most common goals are, I want to have my own studio facilities and I want to work with pro sport. That's probably the top two. And then the other one is, I want to have a huge profile. And that often comes down to people's how they where they see value. Like, resource theory looks at status, and a lot of people who want the fame and the notoriety are all about status. And some people are more about the finances and the remuneration. So remuneration, I should say. Yeah. So, you know, it doesn't matter what title they've got. If they're not seeing the money in the bank, then they're not happy. So I got to work out which way they go pretty quick. And then in regards to the process, it's not just about the things that you gather with your experience. It looks at you as an individual and what you need to work at your best. So a lot of people make the mistake of writing a huge to-do list and writing down all these things they have to mirror from books and mirror from, you know, the success of others. but they don't look at themselves and say, right, well, what do I have to do in order to become the best person I can? Do I need to develop here? Do I need to get more experience here? And, you know, what I like to, if you imagine those listening, that I've got a piece of paper in front of me and I'm drawing lots of little circles together. Though all those little circles, when they come together, help make you really successful. But the problem is a lot of people just look for one big win and one big circle that's going to do it all. But if you're shithouse with your time management and you're horrible with your communication and you get put in a position of power and influence, you're going to fall off your perch really quickly. So that's where we look at the personal goals of what you needed to develop in order of your personal and professional skills. And then looking at more of the interrelated goals of who are the people you need on your team. Because one thing I'm very straightforward with is I know what my weaknesses are. I know what I'm good at. And I know where things fall through the net. And surrounding myself with people who complement my weaknesses and know what my weaknesses are is so important in order to help Mindset Mojo get to where it's going. So, and also being transparent with, you know, I've got two children and I've got a wife and I've got commitments to things. So I can't just go to my end goal and go, oh, I'd made this joke at the mastermind a couple of months ago. I said, oh, great news, honey, as I walk in the front door. What's that, Nathan? I got a new job. Oh, really? Where's the new job? Well, now I just got titled conditioning coach for the Spanish soccer league. So pack your bags, baby. We're leaving tomorrow. Now, the thing is, my own – you know, end goal, did if that doesn't align with my wife's and it doesn't align with what my children's goals are in terms of their education, their friends, my life's going to turn to shit. So if I don't understand the people around me, what they want to achieve and where they're going, it's going to cause conflict. And that's why as I build my business and, you know, Ruth and I have started working extremely well together. Of course, in any relationship, there's always disagreements, but you move past those. We brought on Jose Thomas as a coach because his why and his values and the person he is so well aligned with what I love and, you know, what I respect that the person comes before the skill set. So I don't care what your skills are. Your character and what you stand for is what I'm looking for.
And would you say he would come in and prop up some of the areas that you are not as strong in? Is that part of the reason also why you've worked with Jose?
Absolutely. So he's got an ability to draw people in. The first time he spoke at our mastermind, I don't know if you watched that video back ads, but he delivered a presentation that had so much emotion in it that when I went up to do the review, I burst into tears. And everyone's like, what's going on here? Because you know, he spoke from his heart. And it was a story I won't share. It's obviously quite personal to him. But that's where the wee goal came in. And Ruth, my wife, jumped in, drew the spotlight off me and allowed me to collect myself and get my stuff together. So Jose's, for those who haven't heard of him before, it's Jose Thomas. He runs Mana Fitness in Clayton. And he's a Mindset Mojo coach. He's ASCA level 2. He played rugby for Fiji. He had his own charity called Changing Lanes, where he changes the lives of Polynesians and all the different people over in Samoa and, you know, his homeland of Fiji. And he's got this mission. And what him and his wife stands for, I have nothing but respect for these guys. And my whole thing on building a team, one of my philosophies is I want to be able to drop my children off at your house and know they can stay there for a day or two and I don't bat an eyelid. I don't question anything. And that's something that Jose and Anna stand for. I could drop Ava and Connor over there and I could take Ruth out for a holiday for a weekend and there would be no second guessing about, you know, anything, you know, just knowing their character. Because if you know somebody's character is intact, this comes with clients, this comes with teams, this comes with networking. You know that there's no malice there. And if you and I were working together, Adam, and there was a huge stuff up, I wouldn't go in there throwing my fists around. I'd know that something has obviously gone wrong because it's not in your nature to be deceitful.
Yeah.
And that's what leadership's about, bringing people together and bringing out the best in them and creating a tribe of people that can lean on each other, that are safe, and that grow each other. Yeah. So that's, I've gone a little bit philosophical there, but that's about how I see goal setting. But then also, if you haven't got a goal in place that makes you uncomfortable and makes you nervous and scared, you're not setting them big enough.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think that's one of the big things that I took from working with you, is you sort of pushed me in that direction of being uncomfortable, but not to the point where you spoke about before, running in the opposite direction. It's uncomfortable and you, but at the same time, and I think having someone in your corner, which, you know, is on your side and is there for you, gives you that sort of little bit more confidence than you normally would have. Is that something that you sort of developed as well yourself? Because it's something that's impressed me, is you've got a laser focus, but you never seem to second guess yourself. You kind of feel, I feel like when you say something, you mean it, and you just have this strong mindset. Where do you think you got that from?
Where did I get that from? I think there's been part of me that, you know, an insecurity that I've had, you know, growing up, is that I'm not good enough and that I'm nothing I do is good enough. So I always look at something that I can achieve, and, you know, once I achieve it, I'm like, this is just the beginning. But there's been times, don't get me wrong, I remember when I had an opportunity to start lecturing it and teaching my therapist about rehabilitation, about, you know, this in-depth anatomy. And I was standing at the front of the room, and I thought, oh, I know this stuff. And some slides come up, and I had no idea about the content because I wasn't prepared. I thought, oh, I've done this one before, and I hadn't. And I was sweating. I was sweating. My mouth went dry. My stomach churned. And people were just asking questions, looking unimpressed. And I thought, okay, this is a three-hour presentation I've got. And I looked on the wall. I'm like, it's been 15 minutes. What the hell am I going to do? But, you know, one thing that I've learned, and that I have to credit Samir Javid. So Samir Javid is a hypnotherapist in St Kilda. And I was lucky enough to meet Samir when I did some work with Wim Hof, who you may know as the Iceman. So Samir and I organized Wim to come out and do his workshops on his breathing. Anyone who doesn't know who he is, he's known as the Iceman. He's got all these world records for just defying what many people think is logical, or a bit, you know, he's basically shown that you can control your autonomic nervous system, which science believed you couldn't. Yeah. Right. So being able to control your lungs, being able to control your blood, like, it's absolutely phenomenal. And he said to me once, when I was nervous, he just said it in passing when we were having lunch. I said, look, I'm really nervous about this. And he said, Nathan, you know this. You've been through this before. The information's in your body. It's in your mind. Don't overthink it. Let it flow through you. And that, I was thinking, geez, you know, that is fucking brilliant. Like, let it flow through me. So now I've got the ability to trust. And some people don't like that word, trust. But I trust that my biology knows what to do, and I trust my body, I trust my mind, and I trust my communication skills to help me, to help direct me where I need to go. And I don't think not many people ever get to that point. So I'm lucky I've learned that at the age of 32.
Yeah. Yeah. I remember in one of our coaching sessions, you talked about being grateful, and we talked a lot about being thankful for your past and your lessons. But one story that stuck with me, and I hope you could elaborate on, is how you went back and thanked one of your school teachers long after you'd finished school. And what sort of prompted that, and where did you get that idea from?
My wife Ruth is very, she keeps me accountable. Don't you worry about that. So if I say, oh, this is what we need to do, Ruth will remind me and say, remember how you say this. And it's a good thing, but can also be challenging. And I remember I was at this seminar with Ruth, and there was an activity they did where they turned on You Can't Make It on Your Own by U2. And they dim the lights to really spark this whole emotional thing. But what they got us to do is there was a letter template, and you had to write a letter to somebody in your past thanking them for the impact they've had on you, the lessons they've taught you, and helping you become the person you now have become. And I challenge anyone listening to this or anyone who sees it to do that. Like, there was not a dry eye in the house. And the first person that came to mind for me was a man by the name of Terry De Koning, who was my high school teacher at St. Bede's. And this is when I was still making a lot of mistakes. This is when I was still a kid searching for significance, going through my bodybuilding. I was a little smart ass like most kids are. But he had the way to sort of get through to me and be direct and call a spade, but still be respectful. And I took a lot from him. And I think sometimes what can happen, and hopefully a few people can relate to this, is that someone can have a huge impact on your life and someone can really help you become who you are, but you never thank them. You just go at the end of like a class or the end of the year, you walk up and say thanks for everything, you shake their hand. Or, you know, you might run into them and say to them, oh, you really had an impact on me, thanks for that. But we don't take the time to talk about what's good enough, but we spend more time talking about, oh, poor me, that bastard did this and, you know, I've never recovered. So one thing that I did was I reached out to my high school teacher who took me for sport and PE and just let him know how much of an impact he'd had on my life and that he was pivotal in helping me believe in myself. And, you know, when I was like a young kid, I crashed my sister's car being an idiot with my mate, and I went straight to him, and he put it in perspective for me. I said, my parents are killing me. Like, it's not fair. It was a mistake. It wasn't even that bad. And he said to me, what if you hit one of my kids? And I was thinking, oh. So he just knew how to deliver perspective without grilling me and then saying that, you know, you have to learn from this. If nothing happens and you don't, there's no consequences for your action, you'll do it again and again and again. It was just all these little seeds of wisdom. And because I had so much respect for him, because, you know, he was this really fit, strong guy. He'd been through a separation and been through a lot of hardship and coming out the other end. He was passionate, and he was one of those guys that you either liked him or didn't like him. And straight away I took a liking to him. I respected him. And one of the reasons, which goes back to the question you asked before, was because he knew how to deliver a message and maintain a standard. And I think there's flavors of all these people I've spoken about that have helped me to sort of develop my own style and my own sort of coaching methods, I guess.
Yeah. And so talking about mistakes, is there anything with coaching or perhaps what you're doing now that you look back and think, what was I thinking? Why did I do that with that person? Is there something specific that you've learned? It doesn't necessarily have to be in the last 12 months, but in, you know, the last, say, 10 years that found the formative way you think and go about the Mindset Mojo group and your high-performance coaching?
So I always make mistakes all the time. So, and it sounds cliche, but I make so many mistakes. But the thing is that I can take more hits than most people. And I think that's one of the reasons why I've earned a lot of people's respect, is because I'll do things that scare a lot of people. And sometimes they don't work out, but I don't sit and self-loathe. I'll take it on the chin, and then I'll work out a way to overcome it. Sometimes I'll be pissed off about it, and, you know, I'll go, it's not fair, it's not fair, but then I'll be back on that horse again. So, I've made mistakes, and some of the mistakes I've made have been saying yes to things before I can make informed decisions. So I'd say yes to opportunities, and I'd say yes to collaborations and affiliations with people who I didn't really know. And it was purely based on emotion and them sort of really wowing me early. And that led to problems. In terms of working with clients, probably the biggest mistake I've made is pushing someone really fast who's not ready to go fast. So like they've got everything in shambles, nothing's organized, and we'll get organized really quickly, and then I'll be putting them in the Ferrari when they're not ready for it. So we'll start organizing all these things that boost their brand, and you know, they've set a 10-year goal, and I go, I'll get you there in two years. Here's the steps, here's the process, here's the midterms, these are the people we'll meet, this is how we're going to do it, here's where we need to build, here's your weaknesses, here's your strengths, and then together we start building that roadmap. But sometimes people, they don't want to let me down, so they won't tell me that I'm moving too fast. So I had to learn that. I had to learn that people were shitting themselves because I thought that everyone operated the same way as me. I thought that everybody would have the ability to just grab it by the horns and just go, you know, whatever happens, we're going for it.
Yeah. And what methods would you use to identify that with someone? So obviously you work with a broad range of people in your high performance program and you've got different personalities. How do you find identifying that with that person and knowing how to prod them?
It's very, very subtle, but the sort of things I'll do is I'll always, so if I feel like somebody's getting a bit lost, I'll always say, what are your thoughts on that? Or I'll say, I'll change the focus. So if I was trying to say something that I know is maybe the Achilles heel to you, Adam, about, oh, this program, I've always had issues with it, X program, Y program, and it's making you nervous, it's making you uncomfortable, and I can see that, I can feel that, I might change the context and talk about some different scenarios and then say what potential problems could arise if someone wasn't prepared for that. So I've taken the onus off you, and then if you can come up with more problems than you can solutions, I know I need to maybe change my course. And it's like the analogy that some people, when they look at a mountain, look at the top and go, geez, the view's going to be sensational, let's get on with it. Whereas some people look at that same mountain and go, bloody hell, it's wet, it's slippery, it's not safe. And if they're starting to talk about problems and they're starting to give me fictional reasons why it's not the right time, like sometimes I used to take pride in saying, well, they go, oh, no, that won't work. And then I talk them through step by step and make it a real linear, simple process to show them that it can work. And then basically what happens from there is they identify that it makes them uncomfortable for more of an emotional reason. And then slowly we work into that, because it's never – often the surface is very limiting in terms of what you're seeing. So, you know, people say they don't have the time. People say they don't have the expertise, the knowledge yet, and all those sorts of things. And the thing is, they do have the knowledge, they do have the time, but the self-esteem isn't there yet. So I might have to go down more of the mindset realm of going, right, you know, let's look at some things you've done really well, and, you know, can we maybe borrow some of those qualities, and how could we do this, and maybe get them just dipping their toe in the water at a very subtle rate. And then before you know it, their self-belief just builds. So it's an art form. It's really hard to answer succinctly. But when somebody isn't ready to really go for it, sometimes they just need to be heard. And sometimes people just want to speak and they want to get something out. And me telling them about the process, or me trying to direct them on a way they're not ready to go, you know, I just gave some awards recently. I've got a certificate there for you as well, Ads. It's going to be sent over around – yeah, so there's people who have been awarded for taking extreme ownership and starting to look at their situation and take action to change it. They may not have their facility yet. They may not be working for an NBA side yet, but they've made progress. And sometimes those small wins carry over into so many other areas, not just their business, but their personal lives as well. So it's a very complex question, that one, about how do you deal with that. But, you know, there's a lot of different ways to look at it, and we always got to keep – as coaches, we always have to keep learning and adapting. And there will be people who come along who you feel like you're not getting the results with. So we have to go back and learn again. We have to learn from that, and we have to develop from that, because we never know it all. I still have so much to learn, it's ridiculous.
Yeah. So now being in front of a lot of people and you've had a lot of success with your coaching, what do you say are the big commonalities with the super high achievers versus the people who get sort of good results but maybe don't hit it out of the park? Is there specific traits you can identify?
So in terms of traits, it often comes down to their character. It comes down to their story. So if they've been hard done by time and time again and, you know, being screwed over and this business didn't work because that guy did wrong by them, or, you know, they changed the contracts and this happened and there's been a history of hardship, quite often people are very skeptical to do anything. And when you try sort of talk about and bring to the surface some opportunities to move past that, they'll find problems with everything. And if someone can find problems with everything and just use philosophy, people say they're a real thinker, and this can be a problem. People who are real thinkers will just philosophize and they'll talk for 5-10 minutes without really saying anything. They'll kind of pull random bits of information, but it doesn't make sense. And people who overthink and people who try to outthink a process and find holes in it, they're going to find the holes they're looking for.
Yeah.
Whereas people who, you know, are more of the mojo side. So I've got the Mindset Mojo, to give you a quick snapshot. Mindset's all about having the systems and processes and tools to do things. The mojo is about having the self-belief, drive, determination, commitment. So the young guys and even the guys, you know, in their 30s and even older, some of the guys I'm working with in their 50s, and for example, Jane's just done an incredible job in the last 10 weeks, has completely revolutionized their thinking. If people have the drive and people have the passion and the hunger, but most importantly, if I can put a layer of trust and safety underneath that, they will succeed. Because people are ready just to go blinkers on 100%. So their problem is going to be taking too much on.
Yeah.
Whereas people on the other side who overthink everything don't take anything on. They just analyze everything. And they become more perfectionists, who are like, I can't launch that because there's going to be an update to the Mac in 4 years. So I'm going to wait 4 years until that new update comes in, and then the program will be ready to go. So you can see how I think the successful guys who are successful quite quickly are the ones who have a lot of drive and ambition. You give them some structure and some safety, they'll just go for it. But then it's knowing how to sort of guide them and sort of slow them down a little bit to go, right, you've tried to jump another hurdle and you don't have the tools yet. So you're trying to jump into a facility opportunity and you've never worked with anyone before.
Yeah.
Your bedroom's a bloody mess. Your pantry's full of old shit, and you're going to go and open a facility that looks after people's safety. Chances are it's going to be an absolute disgrace of a mess until you learn how to clean your own bedroom. You can't bypass the fundamentals of success that an individual person has to have that carries over into the professional.
Yeah. Is there any resources, just changing gears a little bit, is there any resources that you suggest, you know, obviously other than your own coaching program we've spoken about, that you find you're recommending to your clients or just people in general who want to sort of take the next step in business and leadership or just perhaps even coaching?
So it sounds cliche, but when you're passionate about something and you spend all your time looking at it and reading about it and listening to it and talking about it, and you go, right, well, I want to be able to help people in this situation, you need to find the leaders in that area, because I can talk about the people who appeal to me and how they've influenced my belief and my thinking. And, you know, I find a lot of men who I work with get angry when they don't get their way and they don't express it well and they go quiet and then they get frustrated and then they drink more piss and then they feel bad about their body and then they just go into their shell and they don't achieve anything. So learning how to understand your the way you operate, self-awareness is number one. So go through all those courses, do all the Tony Robbins CDs, do all the basic self-help books. That's the fuel that helps you understand yourself. And you have to understand yourself and have gone through some shit and come out the other side before you have any conviction in helping anyone else. So the problem is that a lot of people go and they'll have a million resources, they'll have the world's biggest bookshelf, but none of that has been applied before. And I like to joke and use the term shelf help, because all they've got is books on a shelf, and it helps the shelf get bigger and longer, full of books. Whereas you have to actually, when you go and you read a book, or when you listen to a podcast, or when you watch a film or attend a seminar, call all the people you respect and talk to them about what you've learned. And when they ask you more questions, when you talk, you're thinking. You can't just sit there in silence and stare at your bedroom roof on your bed. You have to talk about it, and then people hit you from different angles that allow you to take new information in and really process what you've learned. A lot of people don't process it. They'll read it and forget it. When I learn something, or when I've done something, I'll be on the phone to Terry Condon. I'll be on the phone to Jay Stacey, to Jose. I'll talk to my family about it, and I'll get all these different opinions, someone who's for it and someone who goes, that is absolute crap and here's why. And I want to hear the different opinions, and I have to be humble enough, even if I'm like, oh, Adam, this is sensational, you love it, and you go, nah, that's shit ass. I used to be like, oh, you bastard, and try not to communicate with you anymore because I was too sensitive. But now I go, that's a really good point. I didn't think of it that way. And somehow what works for me doesn't work for you. And it's all about processing and working through different scenarios on what you've learned. Because if you don't really understand something and you try apply it, often you'll run into a lot of problems.
Yeah, I think that's powerful. One of the first guests I had on my podcast, Eloy Rodriguez, we spoke about courses, and he is probably a testament to that. When he attends a workshop or reads a book, he embodies that for the next two to three weeks, and it's powerful, and he's now developed such a strong resource. He might not have done the most courses out of all the other coaches, but he's more effective as a coach because he comes in with his methods and he's cemented his learning, which you've just spoken about.
Yeah, and it's funny. I was joking with Terry Condon. He said he did a talk for Australia Post, and he was talking about motivation and how it's all crap, how people rely on it. Because he can write on a whiteboard and go, set a deadline. And people will sit there and go, yeah, I already know that. And then someone will say, tell people about it. And they're like, yeah, already know that. And he'll work through everything. And people know it all, but they don't do any of it. They don't achieve any goals. But when you say, did you set a deadline? Nah. They can. It's like people who are overweight and unhealthy, who know everything about training and everything about nutrition, and they can talk. They know more than you and I, but they don't do anything with it because they're overthinkers, and they, you know, often – there's an element of laziness there. I'm not saying that everyone should be tarred with the same brush. Some people have specialized conditions. I'm not pointing fingers. But if you're an expert and you haven't applied any of it, chances are you're not going to have much conviction.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. So just switching gears again. So I'm a big believer myself on personal habits and routines, what we do on a daily basis. And because obviously you coach high performing, but you're also a high performer yourself. What are the non-negotiables for your each day? What do you do? What does your day look like?
So I don't want to just be successful in my business. I want to have a successful relationship with my wife, with my kids. So I have to make time. Doesn't matter what's going on. If I could make, you know, I could have a 7 grand week this week, and if I haven't attended my daughter's netball, it'd upset her. If I didn't go to an athletics, it'd upset her. If Connor, my little boy, every morning we go for a walk together, with the exception of the other morning in Melbourne when it was storming crazy, and he loves it. He absolutely loves it, and he just is beaming after that walk, and we have our breakfast together. You know, then I'll make Ruth her coffee when she gets up, because quite often she's up and down a bit in the night, and that routine in the morning sets me up for a good day because I am being the person I want to be. Now, I don't want to be one of those absent fathers who everyone looks at and goes, geez, Nate's done well. He's got this, he's got that, all the material stuff. But then my family doesn't want to know me and I'm never around. So there's some of the non-negotiables. Another one is when I'm on those walks, I'm always listening to podcasts. I'll have one in the ear and one hung over the other ear so I can hear Connor if he's yelling out. And I'll take things in. And if something really hits me, I'll pause it and I'll write it in my notes. And then when I come into my office, I'll write it on my whiteboard. And then when I have the weekly phone calls with all the people I talk about, they always say to me, what's been going on? Because they want to hear what I'm processing, and I've always got new information. Now, if I want to be an influencer and I want to be someone who can grow people and I stop growing myself, I'm a fraud. So I always have to be processing things, learning from things, and applying things. There's no point me saying to you, Adam, oh, you should be going and doing this, 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 and this, and I haven't done F all in 5 years. I'm very big on you have to be the product. You have to be the billboard of your message. So I have to – people have to watch me from where they are, see me succeeding, and then go, I can do it too. And you know what? In the last 4 months or 3 months in particular, I've had people come out of the woodwork. I had a guy from my – I knew in year 10 who's now working with NAB Bank who wants to do some leadership stuff. I've had one of my best friends when I was grade three who's been watching me for like 20 years and never commented. I had a guy when I was bodybuilding when I was 19 who's come out of the woodwork wanting to work with me because they see your success, they see what you're about, they see who you are as a person, they see you're not out on drugs drunk till 4 a.m. every weekend, and it's an attractive character. They go, that's the sort of thing I want to be doing, and if I live that, that's what makes me successful. Because I can't have a flashy – it's like Jane Purcell said to me the other day. I think Matt O'Neill has a term, fake six-packs. That's where I go and I drive a Ferrari up and down the street and people go, wow, he must be successful. But I'm in debt up to my eyeballs and I've got nothing. All I've got is that Ferrari and I'm a – you know, it's fraud. So in terms of my rituals, I always have to be developing and growing. Ruth and I always discuss things. Ruth is going right into the looking at communities and understanding culture and tribes. She's doing a lot of research in that area and doing very, very well. So her name's Ruth Quinn. You can contact her through, obviously, my profile. And then I'm very much on – like I'll go through different phases depending on what I'm facing. So if I learn something from a client or I'm hit with a problem that I'm struggling to solve, that will be my focus. Exercise for me has changed. I used to be all about just absolutely butchering my body. Now it's more about I love grip strength, so I love doing a lot of pull patterns, climbing. I like doing a lot of cable work because my hips and my back aren't stable. So if I go and I do deads and squats and all the bodybuilding stuff I used to do, it sends me backwards. So my routines now, stay functional and strong, stay lean, family, continuous growth, laugh. And one thing Ruth and I are trying to do monthly now, we haven't been doing it enough, is have a monthly regeneration weekend together where we go down to the hot springs in Melbourne, which is like a natural spring falls with different temperature water, and we work on keeping our relationships strong and doing recovery in the process. So these are all the little stones for me that when they're together, I'm unstoppable. When the stones fall through the net, that's when I'll start losing focus.
Yeah. And in terms of mindfulness, I saw one of your recent posts on being sort of connected and grounding yourself. Could you just quickly just touch on that and what that post was all about? Because I think you got a lot of traction. A lot of people don't sort of think of that stuff as much.
Yeah. So the hardest thing that we're faced with is being in a constant state of anxiety because we've got all our devices, our phones and our computers, and there's always emails, there's always to-do lists. And when you never step away from that, you are always in a state of anxiety and future planning. You're never present. And if you're not present, you're thinking about next week, you're thinking about emails, you're thinking about not letting someone down. So some of the things that we put together for a bit of a mental recharge is if you take your shoes and socks off, because there's like something like 80 mil of fluid that goes through your feet each day. That's disgusting. And if you don't take your shoes and socks off and spend some time on the grass and walk around, not only is it great for your proprioception and your nervous system, but there's research by Steve Sinatra that says when you walk on wet grass, dirt, or sand, a lot of the ions and the energy from the earth feed your body. And there's a lot of research that talks about changing your emotional state. So that's like the old adage that you hear all the time about go down the beach and walk with your shoes and socks off. Last week I was, the week before, one of my best mates, Joe, lives in Etherfell. He's just got a house near the beach, one of his goals. And we went for a swim on a Wednesday afternoon at like 2 o'clock. We swam a couple hundred meters. I was going to say a couple of Ks, but anyone who knows me knows I'm a shocking swimmer. And then we were lying on the beach chatting, having a laugh, and that was a great recharge. So shoes and socks off, connection to the earth, going out and walking in nature makes you feel good. It relaxes your nervous system. You can't consciously watch a video of nature and go, I feel relaxed now. Your brain can't override your biology. And there's a lot of research for all the scientists out there that show if you're injured or you're sick and you sit in a room that has a view of trees out the window, you recover faster. And that's our connection to our environment and safety and protection and cover and, you know, energy, the whole works. Sounds a little bit airy-fairy, but there's a lot of research back. And I can say from my own personal experience, it served me really well.
Yeah, I can definitely identify with that. A lot of times ideas and thoughts will come to me, you know, when I'm either in the shower or I'm doing, like you said, I've got my shoes and socks off and I'm grounded. And I don't know whether it's the placebo effect, but, you know, if it sort of aligns with that science and that theory of obviously being grounded, and it gives me a bit of a sort of jolt sometimes. So I definitely concur with that one. Now, just for yourself, who's your coach? Who keeps Nathan running at 100%?
So there's a couple of people at the moment. So one of the coaches I've had for a very long time is Richard Payne, and he's an older gentleman who is very philosophical, but just knows how to get me on track and knows how to ask the right questions at the right time. He's one of those guys who you can be talking for an hour and he'll make one comment and that comment will be in your mind for weeks and weeks and weeks. Terry Condon and I mentor each other almost every week. The last week we haven't called each other, but we'll chat for a couple of hours on the phone. Jason Stacey is a mentor of mine, and also Dan Baker as well. So he's in our Inner Circle program. He's speaking to our elite crew tomorrow in our masterclass. And the lessons I'm learning from Dan, I'm very lucky, like you said, about connection. I can have conversations with these sorts of people that are so valuable that help me really understand who they are, what they're about, and what they want to do. And then that's where we find our alignment. There's another guy who I've started getting coached from through Ruth, named Johnny West, who's very big on communities and building, you know, a loyal tribe. And a huge mentor of mine who I haven't met personally is Simon Sinek. So all his latest work on anyone who reads his stuff, like particularly Leaders Eat Last, it just speaks to not the science and all the latest techniques. It speaks to our biology and our community and what being a leader is really about. So a lot of the conversations I have are heavily influenced by the amazing work he does.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. So just as we're getting to the end now, I just got a few rapid fire questions that I'm going to ask you. They don't necessarily have to be rapid fire answers, but we can sort of get to know you a little bit better on a personal level. Sure. First one is, you might have already answered this question. What's your all-time favorite book on either training or self-help?
Manhood, Steve Bidoff. Okay. Easily.
Yeah. And do you have any quotes that you live your life by?
Yeah. Your level of success is directly linked to your level of self-esteem.
Awesome. And what do you do for fun on the weekends?
Swimming, learning how to do butterfly, and playing guitar, seeing live music, joking around with friends where we don't talk about work, we're just silly, you know, watching films with Ruth and being stupid with her, I enjoy, just seeing probably the happiest I've been in a long time was a couple of weeks ago. There's one of those big flat tire swings, and pushing my two children together on that swing, just a moment of absolute gratitude. Seeing two kids that I've created laughing together was just overwhelming. So, like, that's the sort of stuff that brings me a lot of joy.
Yeah, awesome. Favorite cheat meal?
I like red wine, but probably dark chocolate.
Yeah, yeah.
To be honest, Adam, with my stomach, like, our family is really sensitive to gluten and lactose. So if I do that, I pay for it. I get really sick, yeah. Which is kind of a good thing.
Hold you accountable.
That's right.
If you could be known for one thing, what would it be?
If I could be known for one thing, it would be curbing the scenario of young men taking their own lives, feeling helpless and hopeless. So if I can have a huge influence on that and bring older men to mentor these younger guys and give them hope, respect, trust, and love, that will be the ultimate legacy for myself.
Yeah, it's great answer.
It's going to happen. I'm bringing people together who have that influence right now.
Yeah. And what's in store for the next 12 months?
So in the next 12 months, we're starting to run some short seminars. So rather than trying to do the big mindset and performance event again, we're doing short targeted seminars, like 1 and 2 day events that help target people on specific areas. Because what I've found is sometimes when you run seminars and there's too much information, people go, oh, wow, I got to see this person, that person, but they walk away with very little. So we're starting the short seminars. We've built our team, so we're going to be taking on some more coaches. We've had a few people applying. We got some guys who are ambassadors for us now. We got two ambassadors for Mindset Mojo. We're also aligning ourselves with Love Me, Love You, Lance Piccioni, who's right in that space of what we were just talking about, and helping to train up some of his team. We're going to be doing work with some major insurance companies on leadership, some banks, and we're also moving into some of the sporting worlds as well, not in terms of strength and conditioning, but more the word is getting out there, and we get propositions all the time now, which I'm really proud of, but it's a matter of staying true to course and helping the guys I work with succeed, because that makes us succeed as well.
Yeah. Just two more questions. What would one thing about yourself that your clients would be surprised to know about you, or even people online?
Probably the stupid voices I do at home to Ruth. And she says, if anyone saw you right now, they would be like, what the? Because I just do. Sometimes I find it really entertaining trying to weird out Ruth by just being really weird. And it's, I find myself hilarious, but the looks on her faces entertain me.
Yeah. Yeah. I'd like to get her to capture that on her phone and post that online. And final question. If you could jump in a time machine and give yourself advice for, say, 10 years ago, or maybe even longer, 15 years ago, what would it be?
You know, that everything you thought you would become is going to happen. Everything that you knew you had inside of you is going to come out, and it's going to change. You're going to achieve more than you ever thought possible.
Yeah, that's a good answer.
Keep fighting, keep working, and you'll get it. You're going to get everything that you work for.
Yeah. So just rounding up, where can people get in contact with you and learn more about what you do and your programs? I guess this is a bit of a plug for yourself, your training services.
Yep. So we've got our social media, Mindset Mojo Coaching, and that's where we put a lot of our content up. You can also find me, mutual friends with yourself, Adam, on social media. I do 2 or 3 videos a week and some content. We've got our mastermind, so anyone in Melbourne, Australia, can get a guest pass to come along and meet our crew of all the people I talk about who are achieving incredible things. So, you know, there's some of the 5 people you spend your time with who you become, and you're going to, you know, you will absolutely rock if you surround yourself with some of the guys who have been involved. So that's face to face. You can find me on iTunes, Mindset and Performance Coach, Nathan Quinn, where there's a whole library of all the guys who have influenced me, hours and hours of great content there. And where else can you find me? I'll be speaking at Phylex this year in Sydney. So I've been invited to speak in April in Sydney. So anyone in Sydney will see me there. I'm talking about leadership and conflict. Yeah. So you know, the things that often become the weaknesses that help people fall, cause people to fail. So helping to turn your weaknesses into strengths. So I'll be speaking there. Where else could you find me? I'm not sure. I think that's a good place to get started. So the social media, the podcast, the events, you can come down to our mastermind in Melbourne, and there's going to be a lot of stuff coming. So if you connect with us and follow us, you're going to we'll keep you in the loop of anything that's coming up. We got some retreats that are going to be at the end of 2018 in Fiji, where some of the top guys in the world are going to be there for immersion. So you're going to be with them and their families. And if you go through and you actually achieve what you need to in phase one and, you know, in the inner circle, then you'll be invited.
Yeah. Awesome. Well, it's been fantastic having this opportunity to chat, and it's great as always. So thank you for your time.
My pleasure, Adam. And I just want to let all the listeners know that Adam McCubbin's doing some amazing things. He's taken great action. It's always really humbling to see that, you know, when you've worked with someone, they're having tremendous success, and you absolutely are, Adam. So keep your great work up.
I hope you've enjoyed this episode. Nathan is a fantastic resource of information and an unbelievable coach. He's personally coached myself. I highly recommend his coaching programs for anyone looking to take the next step in their career or mindset. I'll link to his accounts and website in the show notes that can be found on my website, hulk-strength.com. Please subscribe to this podcast through iTunes, Stitcher, TuneIn, or Google Play so that you can be updated with future episodes. Plus, if you'd like some of my free training resources, subscribe to my email list at hulk-strength.com. I've got a number of free documents, goal setting documents, nutrition and training programs. Stay strong, and I'll catch you next time.